Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello, happy Tuesday. Today is July 21st, 2020, and I'm Michelle Pichet, filling in for Jeannie. I'm here today with Dr. Michael Rice, and we warmly welcome you to the show. And thanks for choosing to spend some time with us. The call-in number, 563-999-3581. Press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk with our host. We encourage you to call in with your comments or questions, allowing you to actively strengthen and deepen your practice. So now let's welcome Michael in support of developing our inner process of Aramaic forgiveness.
Hey there, young lady. Thank you for that welcome, and thank you for being here to do the show. I hope we're going to be able to carry out and carry on through the show. Dr. Tim apparently had difficulties, and so he finally closed the show off. A little bit earlier because there was some technology difficulties. But so far, it sounds okay. Can you hear me, Michelle?
Yeah, the error message that I'm getting on the switchboard says we are currently working on an infrastructure issue that's preventing broadcast from live streaming. The content will still be available for archive use. So we are recording, it appears, and there's people on the switchboard and a person with a hand up. So let's see if we're able to live stream or not. If you want to check in with area code 610.
Hi, this is Susan, and I promised Tim that I would push one as soon as you came on the air to say you're on, and it's working so far.
You're on. Welcome.
Thanks. Well, you're on is what it is. We can hear you fine. The thing that was happening to Dr. Tim was he'd be talking along and then suddenly silence. I would text him. I would hang up. I'd dial in. I'd get the introductory music, not your music, but the Blog Talk music. And then suddenly Dr. Tim would be talking to me again, but he'd ask me if I could hear him, and I would answer yes, but he couldn't hear me. All these weird things. So be forewarned.
Well, so far you sound good. So how are you? We had an appointment to carry on our conversation from yesterday anyway, so here we are. Welcome.
Thanks. Well, I would love it. I have some big questions. Grady Love called me yesterday after the show and very kindly talked to me about a situation he had had with a family member and how it worked out and what his approach was. And he said that the intervention model for him he didn't think it was the best thing. And Michael, I have had the same feelings, but one of the things the intervention protocol is that all family members who are working on confronting the addict, we also confront ourselves. It's a healing journey of recovery for all of us, but we're all supposed to be on the same page. And I think that's wise. One of the things they say we should always say to Luke, they say, you can stay in touch with him, keep it light, tell him you love him, and add, when are you going into recovery? Well, I have had the feeling that this question is problematic, especially for Luke, because going into recovery means going away for 3 months into a facility designed, in his case, for addiction and mental health issues. We found a place that sounds wonderful. They do not prescribe drugs. They do the kind of work you do, Michael. Maybe you know it, and I've been reading about it. It's got the word fire in it, and I'm blanking on the other one. It's up north in New England somewhere. Anyway, it would be, and we would pay for it, and one of us would take him there. We would visit him on weekends. But his story is, and it's true, he used to confront his father. When his father would blow up, he would stand in the way of a younger sibling and say, "Dad, you can't do that." And his father would aim his punishment onto Luke, and Luke got very badly hurt. He was also, Luke learned how to be just as angry as his dad, too, and would hand it back to him, and it was an ugly mess. So when Luke became a young teenager, they sent him off to boarding school. And Luke interpreted that as a total rejection and abandonment. Then they sent him to college, which was fine. But in between there, they sent him to Knowles. It's a kind of a vision quest thing. He was much younger than any of the other kids who were there. He was extremely frightened and lonely for however long it lasted. Came home saying he had been miserable, scared, cold, uncomfortable, hungry, sleepless. They left him alone for long periods of time. He was too young to do well with that. And so he felt that that was not an act of love either. They sent him away to help him heal and grow up and learn his lesson and all that. They called it love, and it was, but it was, in his case, not the right thing. And now with this intervention, here we are asking him to go away again, leave his girlfriend, leave school, go away for 3 months and straighten himself out. He takes it as a rejection and an insult. So I've been saying to them, I want to stay in touch with him, but I'm not going to say, when are you going into recovery? I'll let you say that. But they want me to say that. And they say, it's fine if you don't, but, you know, it would be better if you were in on the same page with us. Now, Grady had a wonderful way of loving his way back into his son's life that I thought sounded terrific, but it took a long time. It was very scattershot by the sound. And I took Grady's thoughts. I wrote some notes, called my daughter and said, what do you think of this? And she said, Mom, I need to do what I'm doing. You can do what you're going to do. But I've seen Luke. We went from wherever we were to Wichita, stopping at two airports. As soon as we got to the airport, he went to the bar and drank. He drank on the airplane. He drank between planes. He was stinking drunk by the end, falling down, inappropriately exposing himself, doing all kinds of stuff, yelling at me. So I was so frightened that I had to leave the hotel and hide in the lobby for a while and just stay away till he fell asleep in a stupor. She said, I knew then that he was in terrible trouble, really addicted. And I am all for this intervention, and I know it's tough. And Grady says he hates the term tough love. I don't love it myself either. But I wondered what your take might be on all that.
If I were you, I would be listening to my intuition. You know, the whole goal of this teaching is to find the only real teacher, and that real teacher is within. And it sounds like you're getting guidance and hearing from that teacher, and I'd be listening to that teacher. That would be one of the first things that I would move in the direction of. You might help, you know, when a lot of people talk about recovery, they're talking about recovering from a disease, and a redefinition might be useful. To me, what recovery is, what this work is about, is recovering the truth of who we are, recovering the state of being, and recognizing who we are. So, and you know, stories can be powerful, and some stories about your recollection of Luke and who he really is. And that might take going back into childhood and really acknowledging him as the created essence of love. And maybe, Grady, you're out there. Maybe you would join us in this conversation and share for our listening audience, because who knows who else is in this same bind, Grady, if you would touch in and share with us. And I know Michelle has experience in this arena as well. But to me, recovery is about remembering to reconnect with who we are as love and start to live out of that. And, of course, do the work of healing the pain and trauma. And it sounds like Luke's carrying his fair share. I've never seen an addict drunk or otherwise, whether it's drugs or alcohol or food or whatever, that isn't in extreme pain. And, of course, if a power person, as we talked about yesterday, if a power person lashes out at a child, the child's going to tend to lash out, and it sounds like he's become pretty good at it. And of course, that makes it difficult to be the space and hold the space, and really makes a great demand on the individuals who are on the other side of the recovery to do their own work and recover their state of being. You're probably confronting generations of trauma. You know, if we listen to what Tim has shared with us, Tim Bingham has shared with us about his relationship with his dad and how the male children were treated in his family system, it sounds like young Luke has got this going on from both sides, and it's a big piece of work.
It is. I love what you said, though, about recovering your true nature. That word, I just need other words. What I wrote to Luke in my letter that he hated so much was growing and healing, and we're all trying to grow and heal, which to me sounded like recovery, but I don't think he translated it. And you know what else happened, Michael? I wrote him a letter, pretty much a summary of what he had told me last summer. All summer he lived with us, and he told me about what had happened in his household,
right,
how he wasn't protected, what his father did, some of the episodes, and these in a kind of journal. And I reiterated them to him in what I thought was a real love letter of saying, I know you're struggling. It's not your fault. These are the things I remember you said. I didn't put that. I just said, remember this and remember that and remember the other. He wrote this scathingly angry letter saying, how dare you attack me this way? And it didn't even occur to me at the time that all I was doing was recounting his own story that he told to me. Now I've been in trouble. I've been told by him
that he's using alcohol. You're telling him the story that he's using alcohol to escape.
Yeah.
So you're becoming the enemy because you're reminding him of that story.
Oh, yeah, I am definitely the enemy. But he says, how could you say these things to me? And his girlfriend said the same. And they said she and her parents are all laughing at Tim and me and our whole family for being so callous and insensitive and punishing and cruel. And I'm going, gasp, gasp, gasp. Is that true? Is that true? Is that true? You know, I don't mean to do that. And better have a look at all that. And I have. But you've given me a bridge word, a bridge understanding, by saying recovery is recovering our true self. That's a gorgeous idea. See, I don't want to leave my family and break ranks. I don't want to do that. But I don't want to do anything that would make things worse for Luke. So there you are.
I hear you. And if I were in your shoes right now, I'd be sitting down writing him a letter. But my letter would be about my memories of the sweet being that Luke is. And I remember, you know, when the radio shows back there a year or more ago with him and you sharing some of the stories about who he was. And you might, in fact, that's a technology, and I don't remember which community is, but there are some native type communities, indigenous communities around the world, where when someone goes off the rails, they bring them into the center of a circle of everyone in the community, and everybody just starts to share their sweet memories of that person. Until
I remember
it's finished, until they're complete. And mm-hmm. so, you know, perhaps that's another way you can support him, is to enter into that conversation of who you remember Luke as. I remember you as a newborn. I remember when two, and I remember when you did this, and how sweet it was and how cute it was. And I remember when your brother was being attacked and how you stood there to, you know, they might be the kind of memories that it's time for him to hear and reconnect with.
Great idea. Yeah, thanks. Good idea.
Are you out there, Grady, to share with us?
I guess he isn't. Yeah, he said he had come onto the radio show very late the last time and heard me talking, and I only got on at the last 10 minutes or something.
Right, right.
Yeah. Well, he
Can you hear me now, Michael?
Oh, there's the young man. Welcome. Haven't heard your voice in a while. Glad you're here.
Grady.
Yeah, yeah. I think one of the things that Susan, and I really appreciate your courage, Susan, to keep to bring this up as an example that we can work with, because I think we all know situations of similar nature in maybe a little bit different circumstances. A lot of this is playing out for you, but we've had it play out in our lives too. So I think this is very good. But yesterday when I contacted Susan, it was out of a need I had to simply hold her in a place of love. And in that space, we had a conversation, and I volunteered after she asked if I had any thoughts, my experiences with my son. And we went through probably from the age, he was about 12 or 13 when he didn't go into the drinking part and the drugs part, because he has such severe allergic reactions, I guess, as I'd say it. And alcohol, he tried it with some friends, he became violently ill. So things like, you know, that kind of a thing was not in his cards. So what he did is he literally shut down. He would go into his room, curl up in a ball, and not come out for days. Lock the door, board himself in until he was ready to come out. And so that was what we were facing in terms of challenges with him. And we went for easily 6 years until he was old enough and actually got out of college. It was just a very difficult situation. We had no idea what to do, and we knew what we were doing wasn't working. And ultimately, we came to the conclusion that it's our son's choice to heal or not. Regardless of what we're doing, it doesn't matter. So if we take an approach, and I'm paraphrasing now, having the wisdom of the last few years of working in in the study of forgiveness and love, Michael, so this is a paraphrase. We needed to change first, my wife and I. And as we were experiencing his response to our changes, and we completely reversed a lot of our thinking and stopped browbeating him. We stopped forcing him. We started to simply encourage. We allowed him to make his own mistakes. We stopped micromanaging him. We stopped the attacking. And I will add this, there was one point that just, it was probably as eye-opening as anything, is Michael, my son, said to me, "Dad, I have found another person, an older gentleman, a teacher, and I have adopted him as my father." And he said, "I just can't communicate with you.
I bet you had to breathe on that one, Grady.
This man offers me what I believe is balanced,
and we're breathing with you now,
consideration for my needs and guidance, but from a place that was softer and less attacking." So that told me that the change I needed to make followed from, and this follows beautifully through the work that you teach, I needed to heal myself in many ways, as my wife worked as well with herself.
Are you still with us,
Katie? And we worked together as parents to heal ourselves before we could ever begin to make inroads with him. And the whole attack thing, surprise, and the intervention thing that I told Susan about was, I do not agree with using fear, hostility particularly, hostility being the aggressive side of fear, in an expressing way,